Hello and welcome to You Said This Would Be Fun, a show about game design, where game designers call in and tell us about problems and challenges they have with their games, and we provide helpful advice to them. My guest today is Johnny Pack, game designer and developer extraordinaire. Johnny, welcome back to You Said This Would Be Fun.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Now, Johnny, we talked last time about your experience as a developer, and you know, one of the prestige brands in our industry is Alea Spiele, of course, and one of their cult classics is Glenn Moore by Matthias Kramer, and that was recently re-released in a second edition. It's really a revamped version of the game, and I noticed that just recently there's an expansion to that game that came out with your name on the box, along with Kramer, along with Rüdiger Dorn, and I just wanted to ask how that came about, how you got the, you know, who you had to bribe to get that assignment, and and what that experience was like working on that project.
Hey, cool. Yeah, so that was I actually got the first edition of Glenmore when it came out back in the day. It was actually, I think, 10 years ago now when Rio Grande licensed it, and fell in love with the game then. I, at the time, you know, loved Carcassonne and other things like this. And this took tile placement and the rondelle. There's a lot of really cool stuff going on in that game. So it's been a favorite. And then it went out of print, and I knew it was a grail game for a lot of people. And then I was excited to hear a while back that Fun Tales was going to do this Glenmore 2 and then revamp it and then deluxify the components. The original is one of the small box games. And if you've seen the box for this Glenmore 2, it's giant. And it also has a collection of chronicles in it, and that's what it's called, Glenmore 2, the Chronicles. And each of these are modular mini expansions that you can spice up the game with. And a couple of them are by guest designers, so such as the designer of Carcassonne did one of them. And for that came out at Essen last fall, and it's done really well for Fun Tales. And now they are going to create this new add-on, which they're going to kickstart later this month, I believe. And it's going to have a few more chronicles in it by guest designers. And it's going to have a solo mode that is going to be compatible with all of the chronicles up to this point and presumably beyond. And so I was lucky enough to connect with them Gen Con last year, and then at Essen when I was there, and just chat with them and befriend it and kind of fanboy out on them. And they invited me, say, hey, if you want to submit an idea, shoot us an email. I'm like, oh my gosh, that'd be amazing. And I sent something over, and sent over a couple other things. They're kind of hemming and hawing, and looked at one, and one of them, one of the ideas stuck. And so that was exciting. And so I got confirmation that we're going to do this. And that was what kind of inspired the Highland Games, which is the name of this chronicle. So so I get to make one of the little chronicles in there, which will be just like the other ones, where you can optionally play it with any other combination of those to spice up your Glenmore experience, and kind of get to add my name to that legacy, which is really special because, wow, like I said, it's been one of my favorite games for a very long time. And it's awesome just to think that, you know, when I saw that box image, I was like, whoa. And then, of course, I'm a huge Dorn fan, so it's like seeing those together doesn't quite feel real yet, actually.
Yeah, that's a great story. Well, and I think it goes to show, go for it, and sometimes it will work out. And it sounds like it worked out in a big way on this one for you. So that's a great story. Congratulations on that one.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I think that experience and your other experiences in the world of publishing will definitely be helpful. I see we have a call on line two here. We have from Indiana, Scott calling in. Scott, welcome to the program. You're on with Jeff and Johnny.
Hi there. Hi, guys. How's it going?
Hey, how are you?
Hey. Very well. Glad to have you on.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I called in. I was wanting to talk about a game that I have called We Fight Crime. It's a cooperative game where players team up in a buddy cop movie. And I noticed a couple of years ago that there were virtually no games in the Board Game Geek database about buddy cop movies. It's a big film genre, and I was kind of surprised about that. So I set out to kind of make that game. And so my game leans heavily on the buddy movies of the 80s and 90s, like Lethal Weapon and Die Hard, but also kind of TV series that I grew up with, like the A-Team, or even more recently, Leverage. And so it's a cinematic game, so I kind of break those kinds of movies down into scenes for the players. And I played it a couple of times, several times at places like Protospiels and things like that, shown it to a couple of publishers. But fast forward a couple of years to 2020, and I'm a little bit concerned that some of the tropes of this buddy cop genre are not really sellable in 2020. And even though I'm treating the violence as kind of wacky and cinematic and over the top, like in those movies, it feels a little insensitive to have maybe that in a game right now. I'm not really sure. I don't want to get into the politics of it, but it seems like there's some raw feelings out there about police and violence right now. One option I've considered is possibly retheming it to something else. And I've been thinking of maybe latching onto an existing intellectual property. Mm-hmm. And so I think any popular property, maybe with a team working together, would probably give some of the same feelings as in a buddy cop movie game. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'm kind of at a crossroads of what should I focus my game design efforts towards. Do I focus it on the original buddy cops idea, or do I try to market with to publishers with a specific intellectual property in mind? And if I try to go that route, how do I find publishers working with a particular, I don't know what publishers have which IP. So mm-hmm. So I wonder how maybe to go about that, if you guys might have any impressions on that.
Cool. Sure.
Yeah, this is a great question, and certainly a timely one. I think so. Before we get into specific recommendations and that, could you tell us just a little bit about what the gameplay is like? Because I think that's always part of that sort of circumscribes the extent to which you can reskin something, is what players actually are doing and what aspects of the theme you're really pulling out and evoking with those game mechanics.
Sure. The game is cooperative, and it features a shared hand of resource cards by the players. So the players, it's face up in the game. The players can spend those, and it plays in kind of I break down the action in scenes. So the players apply certain resources that they have in the shared hand, and some that they have on individual player powers, and some other resources in the game to either complete the scene or fail the scene. And that's one of the things that I really would kind of like to keep in the game, that players have to decide whether, hey, do we want to try to succeed here, or do we want to chew up all of our resources to succeed, or do we want to say, okay, we fail and take the consequences of the scene? So that's okay. One of the things that I really like and want to preserve in the game. The second comes from the buddy cop idea, but it's a trust track. It's one of the resources in play, that the players start out not, the player characters start out not trusting each other. And as they build up more trust, they get more more leeway in certain powers, and certain things work a little bit differently if the characters trust each other. So
I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was going to be the very next question I was going to ask, which is to say that in a lot of these films and shows in this genre, there's sort of this dysfunctional relationship between the two buddies. They've kind of been thrown together, maybe against their will, and they have to learn to work together, and they, you know, bicker. And I wanted to hear, does the game sort of lead to that kind of that kind of interaction between the players, or does the game model that in some way? And it sounds like there definitely is an element of that in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that was one of the early prototypes I showed at a Protospiel. One of the players said, "I don't really get the one aspect of these sorts of movies is there's that character arc of the way that the players relate to each other, the way that the characters relate to each other." And he didn't specifically say it, but then I came up with this the tracking the relationship between the characters, and that just kind of added a whole new element to the game that was lacking. So
that's cool.
Yeah, I really like that, and I'll give an example from one of my own designs. A friend of mine and I did something kind of similar to what you're doing, but with a Indiana Jones genre of film, you know, the adventure archaeology films, and
yeah.
Kind of we got to very late in the game design process. And kind of realized actually Indy doesn't actually get the lost artifact, right? Like kind of the enemy steals it from him, the Nazis take it away, but then they're undone in the end by their own hubris. And we realized that there was this gaping hole in our design, that there isn't any element of enemies and hubris and everything, but that this was also an opportunity to inject something kind of fun and cinematic and maybe a little bit silly into the game, and that really captured the essence of the genre, not just, you know, the bullwhips and the fedoras, but also the mounting hubris and anyway, so I think that you have hit on what is special about this genre of film. It isn't just the action that happens from scene to scene, but it's also the relationship between the characters, and I think that will really resonate with anyone who grew up in the 70s or 80s and loved watching those shows and movies, or at least is aware of their having existed, I guess.
Right.
Sure.
The challenge is is that it does sort of it doesn't necessarily limit the possibilities for reskinning, but it certainly means you have to be judicious. Like I was just jotting down a couple of things, and maybe something like Robin Hood and Little John or something like that. But there might be certain pairings that you could think of that would make sense conceptually as a two-player co-op or something like that.
Originally,
but it might not make sense with that element.
Right. Perhaps. Originally, I did think of it, conceptualize it being just because of the buddy cop genre, it's almost always two people paired up with each other. But I wanted there to be other kind of, similarly dysfunctional groups. Like I was thinking of the A-Team is similarly dysfunctional.
Yeah.
And the team comes together at the end, you know, or even kind of the Leverage, more recent Leverage television show. I think it possibly could go to other genres or just other teams. So
I think there are two issues that we should think through here, and I'm going to turn it over to Johnny for his industry perspective on this question. But I think the first issue is generic versus IP. Which is to say that think about something like Dinosaur Island. Obviously, this is Jurassic Park with the serial numbers filed off. Very successful game, did very, very well. I assume they tried and were unsuccessful at getting the Jurassic Park license for that game. So that can happen. And I think what you've captured here is sort of something that's the archetype of this genre. It doesn't necessarily have to be a Chips or Starsky and Hutch skin on the game. It encompasses all of those different films just by the archetypes and the tropes, if you will. So
right.
I think that is something that can happen. But Johnny, what is your sense about how publishers think about something like that? Do they want something that they can put a IP skin onto, or do they want something that's sort of going to hit a lot of different potential, potential bells for potential members of their audience?
I think there's two different things that I've seen happen with IPs is sometimes a publisher will acquire an IP and then hunt for a game to put it together with. And so that might happen because they find something's available, they inquire about it, and it's kind of loose and, they've got it, and they just go seeking out games and they kind of look at everything. And I've seen sometimes it trying to make the shoe fit. It's a little bit questionable sometimes. So that happens. And then I've seen other games that a designer will come up with and really would love a particular IP, and the publisher, say, likes the game. It'll kind of hinge on, like, we like this game, we like this IP, actually. We need to make some calls now to see if we can actually get this, and where those rights are, and if they're, you know, global, if they're US, whatever, all that side of it. And they'll get back to the designer with that sort of news on it. So so that's possible. So if you had something like exactly in mind, like one particular IP, like say the Holy Grail, which is a great idea, you'd be looking at, can the publisher get that IP? Or is it a matter of like, can you get, here's a laundry list of all my favorite ones, can you get any of these ones? That would open it up for them to see what's available and affordable, and would have say the least amount of restrictions on the gameplay elements or components that they would want to include in that game.
Yeah, and my sense in talking to a couple of publishers in particular about our Indiana Jones game, but I mean in general, I think different publishers have a different sense about which IPs are gettable and which ones are not. And it depends entirely on who their contacts are and who they've worked with in the past. But I think the recent Prospero Hall line of games, they've done, I think, like Jaws, The Shining, a couple others, Back to the Future, Die Hard. Yeah. I think there was a Die Hard game, and now some Disney games. So I think there are definitely IPs that are, you know, that are gettable now, whereas even a couple of years ago, I would have thought the conventional wisdom would have been, you know, don't even bother with an IP. It's just, you can't get it. Publishers won't even want to look at it. That may not be the case anymore. So, I think I do think it's worth reaching out and trying to see what can be made, you know, what can be gotten, and what are the limits of what your game can accommodate and still be true to, you know, what's special and unique about it. The second aspect of your question is the tougher one, which is it a good idea to just move away from the buddy cop genre entirely into something else, or is that still potentially irrelevant? Or I'm going to punt this question to Johnny. I'll take a stab at it first, which I think is that you have two different things beating against one another. You have, on the one hand, an uptick in nostalgia. I mean, you see, we all pine for a simpler time, a time in our youth when, you know, we used to watch the A-Team. I still remember staying up late past my bedtime to watch the A-Team. It was like this deal I had with my parents that once a week I could stay up past my bedtime or whatever the heck. So I think all these movies that are part of many of our childhood, these movies and shows, really trigger these feelings of nostalgia, and they're good feelings. And you can see how the experience of playing one of these games could bring back those fun nostalgic experiences. And I think there are enough people that would want to have them that I do think there is potentially a market for something like that within this genre. On the other hand, yes, there is definitely, there is going to be a concern from publishers that, you know, even if they like the idea, is that going to go over well with their customers? Is that going to go over well in the broader industry? In a lot of cases, it's probably just going to depend on how it's handled. But I'm going to guess there aren't going to be too terribly many publishers with a just damn the torpedoes mentality about things. They're always going to want to be cautious and and shy away from antagonizing anybody. So I think that will be a concern for them for sure. I don't know. What do you think, Johnny? You work with more publishers than I do. What's your feeling about their affinity or aversion to controversy?
I think looking at their previous catalog is going to give you a good idea what they're capable of doing. Like, let's just give an example of a pretty cool small publisher. It would be like Lucky Duck, who has quite a few like video game IPs and stuff like that. But they also did a game, Chronicles of Crime, in the last couple of years. And I haven't played it myself, but from what I gather, it's pretty dark, right? So it just shows you where their ceiling is as far as, you know, the narrative kind of going to some dark places like that. And you might say something like the publisher of Board and Dice, who has their, they have the Escape Tales series. And I have played a couple of those. And they take some dark twists in that. And so it's not all, you know, light and love and Care Bears sort of things that you'll see in those games. And that might give you an idea of, if you reached out to that publisher, that they won't immediately knee-jerk and say, you know, we want this to be, you know, totally rated G or something like that, right? So so that'd be part of looking into it. And luckily, IPs tend to also kind of have, like, you know, a loose rating along with them. If you think of, like, Star Trek, for instance, you wouldn't really think of, like, how edgy does Star Trek get? It's probably not going to offend too many people. So it's the buyer's going to know what they're getting into, the publisher knows what they're getting into, and you probably know if you just say that, or Back to the Future, or a lot of these things where if we said, like, Die Hard, for instance, we'd have to kind of go, like, not everything in Die Hard can go into a game and not upset some people, even though it is in the movie. So right. You'd have to look at it that way.
Well, and I think it also, it comes back to a question of how it's handled, because I think one of your concerns, Scott, it sounds like, is the fact that in some of these films and in some of these shows, like, the violence is handled in kind of a light way, which maybe feels tonally off to present sensibilities. There was a show called Sledgehammer that was just a ridiculous show in the 80s, but the whole premise was this cop who used excessive force unnecessarily, and it was, you know, like, in the pilot, I think there's a sniper in the top floor of the building, so he takes out a bazooka and blows up the whole building and to take out the sniper, and that's, you know, I mean, we laugh at it, like, that's
over the top.
That's preposterous. It's the absurd. It's not really making light of violence. It's really making, it's showing the absurdity of, I think that's not quite the same thing, but that doesn't mean people aren't going to take it as not the same thing.
Right.
Sure. So it sounds like that's your concern. And it just, I think that's kind of the conversation to have with the publisher is whether they feel like they can thread that needle between, we want to be true to the spirit of this genre, but we also understand that the, you know, the cultural milieu in which this genre, flourished is not the one that's active in the present day. So are we going after people's nostalgia, or are we going after people who maybe weren't even alive in those days and don't have any particular nostalgia for that time? I don't know. I think that'll just be it'll vary from publisher to publisher, I would think.
So what I'm hearing is possibly try both angles to maybe seek out some publishers that maybe look back at their catalog and see, okay, what things might this fit into their catalog somehow, kind of thematically, and also maybe court some publishers with some of the reskins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I absolutely think you could go in both of those directions, and, you know, just kind of see. And I think, even as Johnny said, even there are some publishers that you can have the conversation with that, you know, even if it's not to necessarily pitch the game to them, they might be willing to share some of their experiences. Like, there is a Die Hard game, there is a Top Gun game, there's, you know, reach out to the creators of those games. They're probably accessible, and kind of get a sense from them, like, you know, what kinds of issues came up in the development of those games and in the publishing of those games and in the public reception of those games. You know, what has the response been? What have been the issues that they've had to work through to be able to be faithful to the IP, but also, you know, have a viable product?
Maybe look at like BGG or put in some hashtags into Twitter and see what the reception of some of these games is, and if there's been, say, any pushback to elements that are similar to the game that you're creating. Like, just to give a little aside, in one of my games, Sierra West, there's some bear traps in the game, and presumably you're going to trap bears with them. And people got very offended by that when the game first came out, and there's a big old long BGG thread. Shortly thereafter, Prospero Hall came up with Horrified, and one of the weapons you can gain in that is a bear trap, and I saw no such thread, so I think it's okay to put a bear trap on Frankenstein's foot or whatever else than it is, say, an actual bear, even though my game is historic and so on and so forth. So maybe just kind of, you know, sniff around and see.
Maybe kind of depends on the genre.
Yeah, it depends on the genre and the audience, and it's also did that thread on Sierra West ultimately condemn the game? No, it did. It sold out at Gen Con, it sold out at Essen, it did fine, and so it was just a select few people who found that offensive who actually didn't play the game. They just saw pictures of it and said, I don't like seeing traps in the game in 2019. So it's like, fair enough. So
yeah, and let it not be forgotten that even, you know, the most inoffensive game ever, Wingspan, also provoked a little bit of a controversy, you know, when it was originally its promotional blurb was that, oh, you're running an aviary and attracting birds to your aviary. And bird enthusiasts said, oh, actually, aviaries have ethical problems. And so Stonemaier had to change the promotional language to like, oh, no, you're just a wildlife preserve owner or something like that. So there are, you know, there are some things that little cosmetic changes can fix problems like this, but I think it goes to show you can't anticipate every possible thing that someone might object to, but if you have a sense that something might be objectionable, I think that's a good instinct. It shows that you're, you know, you have concern, you're empathetic, and I think those tend to be very winsome qualities, and I think frankly that those qualities can sometimes win over people who have objections about the design. Like, I tried to handle this really, you know, respectfully. I tried to handle this really carefully. I went through this process. I thought through all these different considerations. And I think people seeing that level of thought went into the game that you've created will sometimes stand down and say, you know what, this isn't really something to get too upset about. You know, I don't know if that's what will happen in this case, but I think it can happen if you handle it the right way.
Well, I'll give it a shot.
Okay. Well, yeah, as someone who definitely remembers some of these all of these films, both the buddy cop skin and the other skins you're talking about, these are fun waters that you're splashing around in here. So I'm very interested. Yeah, I really like what you're working on, and I'm very interested to see how it all turns out. I hope you'll come back on the show in the future and let us know how it went and how things are progressing. But it sounds like you have something great on your hands here. So good luck with it.
I'd love to. Thanks, guys. Talk to you later.
Okay. Thanks,
Thank
Scott.
You.
Take care.
Well, that's all the time we have for tonight. I want to thank our guest, Johnny Pack. You can find Johnny's games, Coloma, Sierra West, Fistful of Meeples, Lions of Lydia, and others at wherever fine games are sold. And you can find my book, You Said This Would Be Fun, at Amazon or DriveThruRPG. If you'd like to call the show or just have general comments or questions, you can reach us at jeff@belltowergames.com. Until next time, thanks for listening.